Okay. Finish your magic wind.
I will be in like 2 seconds. My opponent is roping me. I feel like people make fun of me because I just use Kiyomori on, and everyone's like, it's you, Quinn. Well, like, I'm not using my fucking government name.
Lowercase Brendan McBain at mtgo.com.
Yeah, we can't even use this B-roll. I just fucking like doxed him. Cliff blue white control.
Just beef.
Just fucking tanking after he tried to march up otherworldly night. My poor Tariff the Peak.
Seeking some absolution for my chess clock strats. Casting sudden substitution, pact is on the stack. Lacking self-awareness, creatures on board count as none. Emotional whiplash from the game I should have won. There it is again, that funny feeling. That funny feeling. There it is again, that funny feeling. That funny feeling. Delver decks always on top, suggestions to band-aids. Pronouns form at interest drop, podcast just in case. Decks are getting blander, easy answer, printing more. A car pulls at your fingertips, horizons back to war. TV show secret lair for a dying show. Walking Dead or Stranger Things, it's pretty hard to know. Oko, Asterolabe, Ragavan, Ren and Six. They can't stop printing bangers, destined straight for the ban list. There it is again, that funny feeling. That funny feeling. There it is again, that funny feeling.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the Legacy Podcast. It just records episodes for, I don't know, our own enjoyment, I guess. Not even our own enjoyment, just for posterity. That, like, the files are there.
Punctuality.
Some point.
We should have already.
It's the opposite of punctuality, isn't it?
We've been punctual on recording them.
Oh, yeah, we're great about that. It's in the calendar. Anyways, my name's Quinn Omori. You may have forgotten who I am, my voice. You have like your podcast app and this thing popped up and you're like, who the fuck are these guys? Well, let me tell you, that's me. I'm here as always with my co-host, Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how's
Hello.
It going?
Hello. Good to be back after this indefinite non-hiatus.
I haven't seen you in so long, so it's really great to like see your face and talk to you. I just want to say that. McBain, it's medium to see you. How did you do it?
So I just want to say, like, there's this air of, you know, this is going to see the light of day, this episode that we're talking about. What the listeners don't know is that we've actually recorded 2 episodes and then just, well, we'll get into that in a moment. But
I mean, we can talk about it now. Like, there's no that you've done it. I thought that was. So that was a better transition than you try to throw it back.
Well, I was, you know, I was trying to, what is it, bury the lead, whatever that stupid phrase is.
What, for about 30 seconds?
Exactly. But yeah, we, you know, there's a bunch of effort and diligence that goes into the making of songs, mainly on Quinn's part, sometimes on Jeff and I's part. And sometimes that takes another day or two, and then life happens, and then a week's gone by, and then we're already like, well, you know, we're going to start another recording in a minute, so maybe we just don't release that one. And then that happens again, and then it's been a month, and we're like, okay, So we have in the Disney vault, in the threshold vault or whatever, guarded by several Mongies, three episodes that have kind of been shelved for now. Ooh. Maybe one day you'll get like a nice VHS big box set with all three as a trilogy that we'll release. But
yeah, they're guarded by two Mongies. So if you, even if we had threshold, if you want to get them out, you simply fly over with your giant dragon that you cast for two mana and bash the door down.
Yeah. But here we are, hopefully seeing the light of day, the metaphorical, I don't know what the last name of the villain is. Who's Rita from Power Rangers when she's like,
oh shit, it's like an alliteration. After four
thresholds, I'm free.
Wait, you assembled the Power Rangers. Is that her name?
Repulsa? Is that? Okay.
Yeah, Rita Repulsa. That's the one.
Okay, nice. For bonus points, who are the two meatheads?
Oh, I have no shot.
Quinn,
I'm a little too old for Power Rangers.
I was gonna say, I think Quinn's aged out on Power Rangers. Oh.
I can't even remember, but there was like the big guy and the small guy,
classic archetype.
Yeah, they were just everything was. I wonder where they are these days. But
where are they now? Rita Repulsa's henchmen.
Well, no, it wasn't Rita Repulsa's henchmen. It was just like they were just like around the high school or whatever, weren't they? I don't know. I never really watched.
These are just like dudes. I don't know. You have the lore, man. Power Rangers lore master here.
Okay. Let's get back on track.
The fucking podcast Zordon.
Housekeeping. Jeff, save us.
Oh, wow. It was a Rita Repulsa's dad.
What? Oh.
She like died the Power in Rangers 2006 finally finished? At age 68.
Shit. God damn, where are they now? 6 feet in the fucking ground.
There's been a lot of movies in Japan, though.
Yeah. Really? Was that a situation like it, the whole thing was, right? It was like an MXC Takeshi's Castle situation where it's a different show that was just like dubbed for the most part.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Hit us up with your Power Rangers lore. Okay. Housekeeping, moving this forward. We have an upcoming legacy event, the first of its kind at Mox in Portland, which I believe none of us have been to yet because that opened during the pandemic. June 19th at 10 a.m., good old Legacy 1K. Standard rules apply. Entries, I don't know, what, $35 American or something? Starts at 10, runs to forever. I think a lot of the guys from Seattle are going to be down there. I am definitely not going. The 19th, something's happening. I don't remember what, but I'm not going to Portland. What about you guys?
No. It is right around the corner from the Civic Tap Room. An excellent beer bar, though.
Ooh. Does that put this that pretty easily, I guess, puts this either first or second in terms of Mox adjacency to good beer?
I think it's got to be second now. The Ballard one's like, I think, number one. If this was on the east side, like down by like Hair of the Dog, then maybe this would be better. But I mean, still quite good. Yeah. But it's like right downtown Portland.
If we were a Vancouver, Washington based legacy podcast, we'd be killing it with these events.
Oh, man. But alas.
I know. McBain, are you going to Portland? I saw you take mention of a train in the Slack.
So I'm not going, but I think that'd be super sweet to, you know, everyone hops on the train here. You get to hang out, play some games all the way down to Portland.
Train is not currently running between Vancouver and the United States.
I said, I think it would be super sweet. So in the future.
I just didn't want anyone to get like their, you know, hyped up.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Also just side note, it was Bulk and Skull were the two doofuses and
Bulk and Skull. Okay.
Yeah. Skull's name, character name is Eugene Skull, like quotation marks. His last name is Skullovich.
Skullovich. Is that the guy Bulkovich?
He's like Bulkmir. Farkas Bulkmir.
Farkas?
Eugene and Farkas.
No wonder he works for some fucking witch. Like, you didn't even give Farkas. Names. They're in trouble.
I won't be going down. Honestly, like, maybe I'm just like out of touch, or we're just out of touch with the messaging from Mox, but like, our information literally comes from the one and only Jeremy Edwards and his top tier mailing list. So that's where we got this from. So we're kind of sharing it here. But
yep, jeremyedwards.substack.com.
Yeah.
You can sign up to that rent free sign up to patreon.com/thecanadianthreshold.
But I think it'll be like in the future for the next one. That would be super sweet. Go down like Friday or Saturday morning or something like that. Do a whole day there and then come back on Monday. And like everyone just like, there's no cars involved. You just get to catch the train, jam a bunch of cards, walk around Portland, hang out, have fun, and then come back. That'd be awesome.
Oh yeah. I'm in for that 100% as soon as that train's open. And like, Portland is about as far as I want to go to like a local tournament. You know, that's like before it turns into like plain territory. But it's still really accessible. It's even driving is what, like 6 hours?
Yeah.
That's less than that.
I think like average border weight, unless you have Nexus.
But yeah, take a train, Nexus, jam some games the way down, play test, you know, spend the whole train ride.
The train is like over cyber slots. 8 hours.
Full shift. I mean, who doesn't love a good train, too? That's a big plus. Great.
I've been on before. Well, one time there was a mudslide, though, and we had to take a bus from Seattle to Portland. Not great. But other than that, excellent.
I haven't taken a train in a long, long time. BC Geography Share. There used to be a train that went to Squamish and Whistler that you could take from Vancouver. And I think that's the last like passenger train I've been on. They were like closing the service down. And my mom's like, we're going on this. So that
the last hurrah.
So that one day when you're on some shitty legacy podcast, you can say this. That was basically it.
The one down to Seattle and Portland, like it's called the Cascades. It goes like below the highway, like down along the water. So there are parts that are like really, really nice. You're like on the water.
Sweet.
Jeff,
that sounds sick.
It's 8 hours.
He's tired of talking about nature.
I'm just thinking trains are old hat. The future is car-sized tunnels that you can drive your Tesla through.
I was trying to set you up for the next topic, but we can talk about this instead. What about a train, but like, what if it was less efficient?
What if it only carried 4 people, but also had a higher chance of killing you?
And you probably would never carry actually 4 people. Just one.
Look, if you purchase a Tesla, you could put 4 people in your car if you want. That's called freedom.
I was going to say, statistically, most Tesla owners are likely to have 4 people or 4 bodies in their trunk. Tesla serial killer joke? I don't know. Workshopping it.
That was a real stretch. Sorry.
Going from fuel-powered trains
to
electric-powered cars is like going from paper magic to electronic magic, for which we have some news.
Oh my God, just say it.
God accounts start by the time this podcast is out, if it's ever released, June 8th to the 29th. Very long period of time, which is super cool. But I think if you look statistically, this is probably, I think, what they did for Eternal Weekend, but it just feels longer. This is for Magic Online's 20th anniversary. They're also running some championship tournament, and they have qualifiers for this running every 4 hours. It's a little weird how it's split up, because in order to qualify for the championship tournament, which I think is on the 25th, I think Kevin told me, you have to win a constructed event and a limited event, both, one of each. So these are happening every 4 hours. Legacy is June 9th to 10th. Vintage is June 13th to 14th. Oh, this is like interpolated. That's so weird. Modern is June 17th and 18th, and Pioneer is June 20th and 21st. And then Limited, they have Masters 25
in between. Wow.
On the 11th and 12th. Vintage Masters, June 15th to 16th. Modern Horizons, June 19th to 20th. And Modern Horizons 2, July 23rd to 24th. That cannot be right. That must be June and just a typo on the Wizards website. So it seems to follow the same rules. Buy a token, use the tokens, enter an event. And I think these are only four round, almost like the prelims they did before. So it should be a pretty, you know, good shot at coming out on top of one of these. So I know come the 9th, I'm going to be grinding some of these legacy events to see if I can get in, and then, you know, try to luck my way into like some Vintage Master sealed on the 15th and 16th. You guys into any of this? Masters.
Have you played much Vintage Masters?
Oh, dude, we were just talking about when our Magic Online accounts existed, and mine was a little bit before Vintage Masters, but when that was up, I drafted so much Vintage Masters. It is a good set.
It's very like, I'm trying to think of the last set that was like this, where it's like good. It's like Dominaria.
Mm-hmm.
It's like good, but sometimes there are cards in the end of the pack where you're like, what the fuck is this? Like, just not like, you can't put in your deck. Like, there's that, those kinds of cards. Mm-hmm.
But it's also like, you get that kind of like, I'm trying to think, because it's powered, it's not necessarily powered like everybody's gonna have something, but you just be playing a match and somebody goes like, Black Lotus Goblin Settler, and like, kill your wife.
You're just like, what the hell just happened?
It feels kind of like old school in that sense, that, you know, somebody would put out like some big stupid goblin goon and you're like, holy shit, how do I beat this 6/6?
And also, like, 1 out of 10 people owns a Black Lotus, just like playing it back in 1995. You're like, what the fuck?
I remember when the set came out, we were drafting at a friend of mine's house. Like, you know, we had three of us set up with computers, and my buddy Dylan opened like a Black Lotus on his first draft, and it's like, oh shit. And, you know, it was like 80 tickets or something at the time, because power used to be expensive on Magic Online. Now I have like fucking, I think like, I don't know, 6 Mox Jets or something on Magic Online. Just wow. Falling out of my damn pockets.
Damn.
I remember when they came out, and there was someone who created like a basket or like an index of vintage playable cards, and the price just went like down, 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 and just plummeted.
Mm-hmm.
There's some of them like that have like the cooler printings and stuff are worth more still, but like, yeah, vintage is dirt cheap, except if it's like playable in Modern or Legacy.
Yep.
It's almost like they could, if they wanted, replicate this formula to make Eternal formats more affordable while still maintaining the price of sought after original printings. Seems like there's a template
Magic
for that.
Players
anyways,
for the ethical abolishment of the reserve list.
Conversation for another time.
No, let's just talk about that right now. I'm kidding. Why don't we just get into that really quickly and see where we land? And just after that, we'll talk about Israel and Palestine and then gun control and just try and wrap it up like 10 minutes per topic.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Why don't we include Abandon on some talk while we're there? Why don't we start with that?
It's and then too see how contested. We can't. I don't think we can talk about that one.
But there was one today.
You know, bless Ian for giving us content in a link to click on before we get disappointed.
I love that they just show up now. When it's like bad announcement. It's too bad, like, the nature of social media is such that, like, obviously, like, you know, you get the information ahead of time. Like, it's like, here's what's inside this. Like, if someone just like, there's a band announcement, and you couldn't, like, there was like some spoiler technology on Twitter or something, and you just had to click on it. Just the thrill of clicking on that link and then opening it up and being like, what the fuck? But nope. For those who missed it, announcement, June 7th, 2022, Pioneer Winota Joiner of Forces is banned. Probably not a surprise for anyone who's ever stared down an opposing Winota Joiner of Forces in competitive Magic. Here's one. Expressive Iteration is banned. And then Explorer, where Winota was already banned, Expressive Iteration is banned. Effective today.
Surely there's some other good bans on that list if they posted a ban list update, Quinn.
Well, yeah, what are they like? What about the format that we like? What do they have there?
Other formats, standard. Okay,
I just can't wait, man. I've been feeling so stale with Legacy. I'm looking forward to a change. I'm really excited about this ban list update.
They mentioned Hinata in standard. So okay, if you were like Jifada, I'd be like fucking watching your back. Modern, Legacy. So the ban of Rangaban Nimble Pilfer in January, the win rate of Izzet Delver has come down. And the deck now shows appropriate strengths and weaknesses against the most played archetypes. Reanimator, Control, Resource Denial, Combo, and Aggro are all additional macro archetypes that are seeing success. We'll continue to keep an eye out for potentially unhealthy and unfun play patterns. But otherwise, natural metagame forces currently look sufficient to handle any short-term shifts in deck popularity.
It's good to know that they haven't spotted any unfun play patterns yet.
That's the first thing that jumped out at me. I was like, why would you put that in? Like, what? I like, fun subjective, one, which is like just weird to like call that out. But also, like, who has ever been like, oh shit, is that a Karn? Fuck yeah, now we're partying. Like, what the fuck?
And shortly after championing the success of Reanimator, they're like, Reanimator's kicking ass. By the way, we're looking out for unfun decks.
Also, like, just like, how well do you understand, not just like, I guess the format, but just Magic, when it's like, hey, I think the format's fine because like Reanimator's winning. Like, do you know how that works? Like, graveyard combo decks, like, you print the cards to deal with the graveyard combo decks, people just like skimp on them when they can. Like, that's not a measure of anything other than like people were like, oh, I've seen Grizzlebrand in a while. And then you go, oh shit, I saw Grizzlebrand a lot. My surgical extractions.
Somebody,
what's the resource denial deck?
Oh, Death and Taxes, lands.
Death and Taxes a resource denial deck anymore.
Rishad and Port.
I saw several lists without port.
Yeah, it's not in the decks right now.
It's not in Death and Taxes?
No, because you're playing, as soon as you're playing Saga. Cards. Yeah, as soon as you're playing Saga, you're not playing it. And then you play Magus the Moon.
You're right playing now. 80 cards.
Yeah, and everyone's precious.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I'm saying. What resource denial decks are there?
Yeah. Here's a bigger question. Resource denial, I think you can argue about stuff. What aggro decks exist? What is an
also Death and Taxes? It's just like Death and Taxes.
It's not Death and Taxes.
Every single one of these Death and Taxes. Can you reanimate anything in Death and Taxes yet?
You could play the Extraction Specialist.
Boom. Reanimator. Control. Death yep. and Taxes. Resource Denial. I don't know if you've ever been Wasteland ported by Death and Taxes. Combo. Well, listen. What they do is they resolve Aether Vial, and on turn two, the end of turn, they put in Stoneforge Mystic. And they get Cauldron complete. Boom. And then
combo, baby.
Aggro. What happens? Well, they just play a bunch of creatures and attack you.
Same thing you said last time. They put in a Stoneforge Mystic, put in a Cauldron.
Got him.
Dragon Stompy. I'd add to that one.
I guess that's Resource Denial.
You know what? I love it because Chalice. It's not Resource Denial. It's saying you can have your resources. They'll just tap for red.
Or well, yeah, or they'll all be countered.
Really, it is a weird paragraph.
Yes, the entire thing is weird. Let's move on before we get too irate and depressed.
Well, like, I mean, I don't even know if this should ban any. I don't know, but like, I think honestly, that's the thing. Someone posted, they were like, "Well, I'm glad they addressed it." I'm like, "Are you?" Like, if they were just like, we think it's fine, I'd be like, okay. When they explain it and the explanation's bad, I'm like, oh, wow. Like, either, like, why did you bother? Or, like, do you not have any idea how this, like, game works? It was very weird.
It is, like, a lot of words to just say, like, we're looking at it. We think it's fine, we're looking at it. But the words they chose to use, like, they don't need to take away as much confidence as they do. So I don't know, it's funny. But, like, you know, this morning I saw the announcement and I was just like wired, like, let's go. You know, slam click that button, getting ready to see 8 Mulch fully banned, Toxic Deck and Legacy thrown out of here.
Winding Way is banned.
Mana Pond is gone.
The finally axed Wasteland. Nothing. So, you know, just what to expect.
Well, hopefully Modern Horizons 3 will save us.
Please, Bilbo.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Fuck, it's Lord of the Rings.
It is, right?
Fuck.
Yeah.
God.
Right, just a Raggedman reprint. It's just Gollum. And he takes
shiny off the top of your neck. And I'm like, I can't be Frodo. I'm so fucking mad. That's when the next thing that'll come in the podcast will be like, so I'm selling all my cards. You can reach out to me. Here's my email address. If anyone needs any fucking underground seeds.
On that note, if anybody gets a sick Frodo deck list once the set's out, send it to me and I will play it every week until I beat Quinn into submission.
I'm only going to play Frodo if he's a companion. But then you can also have Sam as your companion or Gandalf.
Ooh.
That's what the new companions are going to be. It's just going to be Lord of the Rings characters.
Shit.
It sounds...
You just also made me realize, like, I would not be surprised to see companions in Modern Horizons 3. Right? Like, it's a mechanic that's hard to fit in places. Modern Horizons sets are where they play different stuff.
How about we move on?
Orion before...
2. 100 card. The Mox 1K.
The one in Portland we're not going to?
No, the one that we went to.
Oh, that one!
Let's talk about that. We went across the border of Canada and the United States, and we went to a Magic Card tournament in person.
This is crazy.
With people.
Who would have believed such a thing?
Not us from the last 2 years, that's for sure. It was pretty awesome. Why don't you say a little bit first, because you did not join us for the event. Where were you and how did things go?
I was up at 6:30 in the morning to register my deck for the Arena Championship qualifier. This New Capenna sealed. I opened my sealed pool and I was like, oh, that's pretty medium. I had played a practice draft before that, where I had like a double mythic plus fight rigging like broker's deck that was like fucking insane. I'm like, I don't know why that made me feel good. I just like drafted good cards. Was not what my pool was like. And then it was like sweet karma because I lost to fight rigging like 4 times in a row. And then I went back to bed. And then McBainey looked me up to grab you something. But yeah, that's what I did instead of going to Seattle. Also, I don't know. I would have like what I like at this point. I'm like, I don't know. Take that pile from the sealed pool and like shuffle that up for Legacy. Like, I don't even know what I would play.
That'd be exciting.
So you didn't get a sweet pool. Sealed is when you get a fun pool in sealed, or it just kind of comes together nicely, and you just get to like have fun all day.
I think it was like it was like the second best outcome. Like the best outcome is obviously when you like open a pool and you're like, whoa, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
The worst outcome is when you're like, this is good, I can like do some damage with this, and then you play, you know, when you have to get 7 wins, you play 6 full 3 game rounds of Magic the Gathering, and at the end of it you have nothing to show but like a smattering of gems and an entire wasted Saturday that you play in front of your computer. Like, see, obviously in person it'd be different, right? But so I feel like opening something up and being like, I don't think this looks that good. and then being like, oh wow, my opponent's deck is really good. And then just being like, well, I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to get back up, eat lunch, have my whole day. Could have been worse.
That's true. You don't want to end up like, you know, 3/4 of the way through the tournament and then just lose.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So threshold minus one, and in some ways threshold minus three. The car ride down, myself, McBain, friend of the show, Uncle Dylan, frenemy of the show, Elliot. We had a full crew going down. Dylan, recently out from Magic retirement of sorts. You know, I think you'd been to 2 weeklies before this event in the last like couple years.
I think it was more that he came back from real life.
Yeah.
And a lot of real life stuff going on for the last 2 years. And also just likes to play. Well, he was playing Magic Online during the pandemic, but he did have a lot of real life stuff going on. Got married, moved, did a lot of work stuff. But he was on episode 57, if you wanted to get the Dylan story, or fun uncle as he was. And I was actually wondering when Elliot was on the podcast, and that was episode 8.
Wow. Which was
a long time ago. And he's been clamoring to come back ever since, but...
We recently implemented a standards level.
Yeah, there's some new corporate policy. So just in terms of, so we went down the night before, like in the afternoon. So we got to hang out for the night in Redmond, some suburb of Seattle area and headquarters of Microsoft, I guess. Got to hang out there. That was fun. But just like, going to the event and going back to Mox, which is a pretty amazing store. What were your just general vibes on the whole Paper Magic scene down there?
I mean, I had like decklist anxiety the whole day before that I haven't had in like years. Oh, yeah. Like literally, you know, every chance we got back in the hotel room, just my deck laid out on the bed. Being like, is this main? Is this side? Do I want to do this whole other plan or that plan? Should I change decks entirely? Like, oh my God. And like, I didn't even so much settle on a list so much as like, I made a few informed decisions and then just gave up at a certain point. So that like sucked at the time, but that's also like really fun because it was like full of just anticipation for like a real Magic event, you know? Where I have to have this stuff done beforehand so I can have a deck list written out. Like, that was just sweet. And like walking into Mox, well, the classic showing up before they open and sitting outside for a bit to, you know, see what's going on and then coming in and, you know, the beautiful big open room and immediately starting to see faces that like we know already. Like, it just felt so good to be back.
Yeah, that was great. It was kind of funny watching you torture yourself trying to figure out your deck list. And then like, we would be like, oh, what about these cards? And you're like, well, I don't have those with me here actually. So I can't do that. And we're like, oh, okay, we'll scrap all of that. I guess we're going to try this. And meanwhile, I think everyone else had like agreed on whatever they were playing like way ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Basically just wrote their deck list and that was that. And you're like sitting there like, the Always Sunny in Philadelphia meme with all of your cards like gridded out on the bed and you're trying to like, okay, but then I could do this and I could do that. I guess we should say that what did you play for the event, Jeff?
Sure. I played Espervile and I was, you know, in the lab with Jack on Discord for a while beforehand talking about, you know, if we're going to try to like squad up and do the same thing. And like, he's been big on splashing like Magus the Moon and like a little baby red splash and playing like Stoneforge Mystic main. And I was like, had that as the plan going in. And then I played like one game with Elliot where I was just like fucked on mana from like a single volcanic. And I was like, I'm done with this. I hate this. I'm out. Like rip it all up. I don't want to do it. So I settled on what I would consider to be a more traditional Espervile list. And was looking forward to it. It was a lot of fun. The deck's just so much fun to play in paper. And Elliot was playing five color Zenith, which is just a fucking shit pile that takes like 16 minutes to get deck checked because every single card is a different art.
I love how that was like his goal going into the weekend was like, I want to get deck checked. And then he did get deck checked. And I can't remember what his time extension was from the deck check, but it was,
I think, long. It was 16 minutes. Yeah. And then they held up the whole goddamn tournament beyond just that, because of course they went to time like on that. It was crazy. And then Dylan was playing Doomsday. It's like, as an outsider to Doomsday, you think, well, this is a traditional Doomsday list. But if you were to ask him, you know, it would be, well, you see, we're not playing any draw threes. You know, there's no Ideas Unbound. There's no deep analysis. You're instead relying on consider stacks where you put two Thassa's Oracles in the pile. It's too big brain for me.
Yeah, I'm just like tuned out at that point. And it was like, oh, you're playing Doomsday, cool. That's cool. Once he resolves Doomsday, I assume I'm dead. Sure, maybe I'll try to fire off an Endurance. I played lands. I played just like the red-green Urza lands. I reached out to Allie. Thank you, Allie, ahead of time. And just said, like, what's your list in Cyber Map? And he said, here you go. Built that and played with that. I'm still not a huge fan of Saga, but I don't know. I'll keep trying it. I keep wanting to go back to some of the older lists, but they're just so bad against Delver, or Delver's just so much better against the non-Saga lists that I can't bring myself to do it in a big event. But it was still fun.
Are you like not sold on Saga by way of like the gameplay that it forces you to play, or like, yeah, you don't think it's good?
No, I think it's good. I just don't like the gameplay.
Yes. Patterns. Yes.
But I still do like how Saga is at this point, like exclusively a non-blue card. There was that little time where there was the whole Reg Event Saga thing, but now it's like, it's played in the mono black depth list. It's played in D&T. It's played in lands. It's played in all these other decks that are just non-blue decks. And it allows other things to happen.
What would you say biggest problem, like generally speaking, with like blue decks and internal formats is?
Like, what are they missing, or like what makes them a problem?
Like, what makes them a problem from a gameplay perspective? Like, what's like the worst thing about blue decks in like Legacy and Vintage?
I mean, it has to be just like card availability and filtering, right? Like the fact that you can be base blue, and then with Brainstorm and Ponder, you can find the rest of whatever you're trying to do.
So like every blue deck has to play like certain cards.
I'm curious what you're going for, but I mean, yeah.
I think what like, he's trying to
you
say
you gotta is play that, Brainstorm, like, you gotta play Ponder. Sometimes you need to play Force of Will unless you're proactive. But like every blue deck, like unless for some reason you can't play fetch lands, you're gonna play Brainstorm,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, even though I'm a huge fan of Brainstorm, and I think Legacy would be fundamentally different without it, I'd say that's like not really a feature. It's like a bug that we have come to accept, that there's like a homogenizing factor for blue decks. So what you're saying is like now there's a homogenizing factor for non-blue decks, and that's a good thing?
It's a thing to do.
I think
it is a thing to do.
It's, objectively, it's too, though, Saga is just so much less cool than Brainstorm or Ponder.
Yeah, Saga is just, it's cool when you can get different situations. Like I did a one where you like copy the Thespian stage, you let it tick up, and then you go copy a forest, and you're like, hey, I'm just going to keep making tokens. Like, that's cool. I like doing that. Like when you only have like one Saga and you kind of get to that line, cool, great, awesome. When it's like Saga and you play the second Saga and then you just start churning through and you're making all these tokens and then they kill them, you're like, doesn't matter, I'm going to loif from the loam and get the Sagas back. I don't know.
Just that is also played into like the maybe correct stereotype about like blue players and non-blue players, where like the quintessential like blue card that you have to play, you could write like a textbook about. And then now the non-blue card, it would be like a tweet thread that's like five tweets long about the different scenarios and decision trees.
Basically. Yeah, I still enjoyed playing the deck. I'd probably switch it up and maybe try again a lighter version of the saga, but yeah, I had fun. I'm glad I played it. Do we want to go into some, like, I don't have any like crazy highlights that I want to go over, but Jeff, I know you had like one or two, and then
yeah, I had a few that I wanted to hit.
I want to mention one of Elliot's that he had, but
sure. So man, the first round was like, you only haven't played like semi high stakes. I mean, maybe it's just me, but like semi high stakes Magic, and especially in like an environment you're familiar with, but you're not like intimately familiar with, like Stronghold. We're sitting down and there's all the people around, and you know, they announce and they have the screen up, and you know, I meet my opponent, very nice guy. And I like, I'm shuffling my deck and I'm grabbing my cards and like, I'm like jittery. Like, you know, I've had coffee, I've had a light breakfast, and my hands are like, oh God, I need to like shuffle this 80 cards. And that was a feeling I haven't had for a while. I lost that match to Delver, probably not because of that, but you know, maybe there was an angle I could have got. The thing with Espervile, there's always some dial you could have tweaked, something you could have done at a different time. But then what I wanted to point out was I played against you know, super friendly guy who I know from playing at Mox a few times, in Miles Wallio. I played against him round two, and you know, he knows me and knows I play Death and Taxes, and I really Yorion, and I got to lead on like Plains Vile, Caracas. And then he cast like an Enchantress's Presence or something, and I forced it. And you just got to see his eyes go wide with like, what? Like a double take of like, you're supposed to be playing Death and Taxes. Why do you have Force of Will? That was always fun to kind of juke the people that know me pretty well. Mentally, I get very wrapped up in trying to do that sometimes too. It's like, if I have the opportunity to play the Death and Taxes lands and probably a worse mana base than I should, I'll like run those out to try to like get some points. And then the other sick thing that I wanted to call out that happened too was in my match against Jordan Isaka, game one, a choice that I wanted to make going into this event really mattered, which was reading the email from Jeremy Edwards of Substack, talking about the decks that we're going to be expecting, you know, very heavy on control, he's projecting. And I'm thinking, okay, heavy on control, I'm playing this, you know, Cavern of Souls Espervile list. I need to be playing a Turok in here. And I would love to play Turok main because it's just so fun to cast Kicked off of Caverns. In game one against Jordan, I have like an early Vial, Cavern, and a Caracas. I'm thinking like, I have the mana. This is going to happen. And I got to Vial in a Recruiter and just go find the Turok. And then you get that like reader moment where it's like, okay, wait, what does this do? And it's like, you can pay Kicker off the Cavern, right? It's like, yes. And then the next three turns, we're just kicking Turok, Caracasing it back to my hand, kicking Turok again, Caracasing it back to my hand, kicking it again. Like, oh, just repeatable him was so good. That's the only game that I won that match, and it involved himming him three times. The rest of it, he just shit all over me with tokens. But so it was a fun time.
Maybe just let's take a pause here. So Jordan eventually won the whole event.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the win in it, right? For top eight when you two were playing?
If I beat him at that point, it would have been 4-1. So I probably could have drawn in.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that when like you and Elliot were both at the top table. At like, you know, mm-hmm. third and fourth and fifth and sixth playing. And so Jordan eventually won, and he was playing that kind of like Jeskai mentor tokens. Deck.
It's really like Jeskai tokens, because you're playing like four mentor, four pyromancer.
Yeah, the four pyromancer was unique. I haven't seen that one on Magic Online yet. But the rest of it is pretty standard. But yeah, there's no lightning bolts. All of his removal is white. So the Torak is just so brutal.
Even like, I had it down and he had a mentor. And I was like, fuck, I have a mentor. You don't have any spells at hand. But like, it's pro white. I can just block all day. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so brutal.
His deck too is just so beautiful. It's all like manually whiteboarded. And so many of these cards look so good. But he kept casting Prismatic Ending, and it was the one card that I could never fucking tell what it was. The whiteboarded Prismatic Ending just looks like shit. It looks so bad.
Well, it's got that border to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he whiteboards the bottom of the card. You know how like the edges, the border swoops into the text box? Right,
the kind of like fat bit.
Yeah. I'm not sure if he just like takes that whole bottom off or how that works, but yeah, I just hate that card in general. But yep. Overall, pretty sweet. There is one card that I think you should talk about. Ooh. Briefly in the sideboard.
Okay. So he showed this to me after. You haven't said it to me right now, but I think I know what it is because this was tech for Delver and like everything else. And I think I can actually try to adopt it into Estravile, which is interesting. He's playing Dawn to Dusk in the side, which for everybody who doesn't know, Dusk to Dawn. Shit.
Dusk to Dawn.
But Dusk to Dawn. For everybody who doesn't know, gotta crack it up and gather it and make sure myself. So it's an Amonkhet split card. So the first half is a sorcery that's, you know, Wrath of God mana and just destroy all creatures with power 3 or greater. And the back half costs 5. So, I mean, it is expensive, but you return all creature cards of power 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand. So this, as a Wrath, kills everything out of Delver. I mean, yeah, sure, resolve a 4-mana spell, But killing everything while keeping your own stuff alive, for the most part, is pretty big. And in his deck, it would kill his mentors because prowess? Yeah, prowess triggers. I was going to say mentor triggers, but mentor does not have mentor. Prowess triggers and then it dies, but the back half gets them back. So it's not really that big of a deal. I think this is pretty sick tech. It's probably not, you know, groundbreaking, but I'm going to pick some up and probably play some on a Thursday because out of Estravile, like until your... you know, Soul Herder or something starts getting big, like the only thing it kills is like Drakes, which you probably want to kill.
Yeah. The, I don't know if I have anything else to say. I will say that the Dusk to Dawn in white border looked exceptional.
Oh, it does look good.
It looks really good.
He has Test of Talents in his sideboard.
Ooh, yeah, that's like a surgical counter and instant or sorcery, right?
Yes.
Beautiful. Like,
look, whenever I put Show and Tell in the stack, I'm not expecting to see this card, but if I did, oh, why would I be sad?
I love the one-ups. Like, there's some one-ups in here that just, like, one meddling mage. I would be so salty.
The other thing, the whole sideboard's one-ups, except there's two pyroblasts. I know Jordan's not listening to this because I think he listens to like baseball podcasts, but someone, if you're listening, next time you see Jordan, like, look, I know it's like strictly better than Pyroblast in most cases, unless you're facing down an opposing meddling mage, but like, why not one Red Blast? Have the clean 15 one-ofs in your sideboard.
Yeah, the only... So, to be fair, with Mentor in play, you can just fire off Pyroblast. You don't need a target. Like, it's a pump. Yeah. It's like theoretically lethal. He's got a Grim Lavamancer. You need to feel the Lavamancer. I think it would honestly be the Mentor. That would be the thing that, where you've got Young Pyromancer, like you need to fire off the spell. Otherwise, he would have the straight one ups.
I get that it's better. It's just like, you know, you're like 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-2.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you, Quinn.
Yeah.
This is a guy who white borders all his cards. I feel like he's giving up percentage points for his exceptional style. So I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh, Waitporter and Nolrod.
Yeah, the deck is beautiful. And I think the strategy is really interesting. It works really well. I mean, it's almost like when Miracles for like a hot minute was playing just like for Mentor, you end up with a spot where you just throw out a Mentor and like if they kill it, sure. If you protect it, sick.
Yeah, I think, he's on the like, six forces in the main.
Yeah, six forces in the main. Now that you have expressive iteration, really makes like turn three Mentor like way more appealing.
Yeah.
Because if you like have to like burn your force on it, then you're like, great, I'm going to get that card back.
Yeah. And then just, you know, dropping a later Murktide and going to town. Always good. I want to talk about the second place deck. And maybe I'll just line it up with the play with Elliot that I wanted to talk about. So Elliot played against Travis twice in the tournament. I think at round, I don't know, five or something like that, they were playing. And this is when he had the deck check. And I didn't know he had the deck check. So they get to the end of game one. And Travis is like, okay, I'll concede or I'll scoop this. Let's go to game two. Like as the clock is ticking down to zero. And Greg, who we'll shout out in a minute, but Greg was like, Greg and I were watching and he like bursts out laughing. He's like, oh my God, this is game one. Like, this is insane. You took the entire length of the round timer to play one game. And then someone was like, oh, they had a deck check. But like, does that excuse it? I don't know. And then they went on to play like another 60 minutes of the second round. And I think they drew like 1-1-1 at the like end hell. Of all that. It was one of those immovable objects versus like an invincible machine or whatever the analogy is, but
unstoppable force.
Unstoppable.
And they're both playing Yarion, so you can't even hope one of the, like someone decks.
No, it was, yeah. We'll get into why, but so Elliot was playing the five color Zenith deck, and I was watching for a little bit, and Elliot like had lost all his board position. Travis was really developing his. I was like, oh, okay, this is like over. And then I look away for a minute, get some water, come back. And Elliot had drawn for his turn and drew his, the hell is that thing
called? Is it Omnath?
Omnath. He top decked Omnath, played the Omnath, like had some fetch lands, trigger, trigger, trigger. All of a sudden he's casting a Primeval Titan and like getting Field of the Dead and a whole bunch of crap and like drawing a bunch of cards, getting life. And Travis is like, what the fuck? And then he just like develops this crazy board position out of nowhere and then just kills him. And they go to game two. But yeah, Omnath was, I saw him cast it a few times that day, and Omnath was just a force to be reckoned with. So going to Travis's list. So I had never seen this before. But I was talking with Greg and he says he's been working on this list for a long time now and he's been iterating on it. But when I was watching him play Elliot, there was one turn where he had a spell seeker in play. So this is like the Imperial Recruiter for spells.
Mm-hmm.
And he ephemerates the spell seeker and goes and gets, so it blinks it immediately into play again. So he's like trigger spell seeker, looks through his deck and gets another ephemerate, and then casts the ephemerate on the spell seeker, blinks it, gets another ephemerate and casts the and blinks the spell seeker again. And I was like, well, what the hell is the point of that? That's dumb. And then I was like, what does ephemerate do again? I was like, oh, it has rebound. So then he gets his next turn. And at this point, he has like a Meddling Mage, a Solitude, a Spellseeker, and like something else in play. So it's basically like a Yorion going off. And he like blinks everything again and like fuels up and just, it was like immediate game lock. Like it was over at that point. It was really impressive. And so there's just a couple matches that I watched and I got to see like all the different little lines that he has in his deck. So maybe just briefly I'll kind of go over some of the creatures and spells in the deck so that we know what's going on. But it's got, can you guys hear me all right?
You're kind of like blinking in and out.
Yeah, but cutting out a little bit.
Yeah.
In 1 sec here.
Oh, now we lost
him. All right.
Oh, wait. Now he's back.
There we go. Yeah.
Were you connected via like a VPN or something?
Perhaps.
Canada's favorite legacy podcast coming to you from Vancouver, Vancouver in Eastern Europe.
Oh, I hope that doesn't like desync things on you, Quinn. I'm sorry. So it's kind of playing just a hodgepodge of lands, but in the creature slot, it had 4 spell seekers. I think that's like the headline of the deck. And 4 Ice Fangs, 3 Eternal Witness, which was quite spicy. 1 Linvala, or Lavinia, sorry. 4 Nobles, 4 Solitude, a Soul Herder, and an Uro. I saw that Soul Herder get out of control, and that was just terrifying. For the instants and sorceries, you had 4 Brainstorm, 3 Ephemerate, a Flusterstorm, 3 Force Negation, 4 Force of Will. So this is almost going back to like the Snoko era of just like infinite card advantage. 3 Green Sun Zenith, 1 Orym's Chant, which you could actually set up these like infinite loops with Orym's Chant where you just keep getting it back with Eternal Witness and like locking the opponent out. So he had like the Soul Herder in play and he was blinking Eternal Witness and then just Orym's Chanting them.
Ephemerate does it too, because you Ephemerate, hit Eternal Witness, get back Orym's Chant, and then on your turn on the rebound, you Ephemerate, Eternal Witness, get back Ephemerate.
Yeah. And then he has in the main 1 Surgical, which, you know, you can go get with Spellseeker and then just like bounce it a bunch of times and just eradicate someone. And then 3 Swords and a Prismatic Ending. And then he had 2 Fable, the Mirror Breaker, and 2 Teferi.
The Fables seem sick.
Yeah. There were so many lines that this guy had going on. It was I was talking with Greg a bunch when we were watching these matches. And he was saying, he's like, I've tried this deck, but it's like too big brain for me. It's just, you're just playing it like a donkey. Like, you don't know all the different things that you could be doing. Like, you kind of have to have built it yourself. But it looked really cool. But it was, at the same time, like, probably peak Yorion bullshit. Like, Elliot was, like, right on the mountain with his 5-color peak Yorion bullshit deck as well. And to just see them both, like, bash into each other, it was kind of awful. But also, like... pretty awesome at the same time.
Oh, the deck looks sick. I think all of us left there thinking, like, I should buy some more Spellseekers.
No, we left there thinking, how much is Spellseeker?
Oh?
It's what now?
Yeah, I know it went up like a while ago, but to see it now, it'll be like $50. Like, Jesus. See, the deck's sweet. Once those God accounts are up, I'll tell you, I'm going to play that. Probably not in these things that I'm trying to win, but I'll definitely play a league or two with it. Seems like it rewards fast clicking Magic Online. Otherwise, you're going to time out for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
The event was such a good time. Like, I would do that again in a heartbeat. Really looking forward to what I didn't mention to housekeeping, but Puget Sound Battleground. You know, same thing, squadding up with a bunch of guys, seeing people in, you know, the city we haven't seen in forever, and just like a big, you know, community to play Magic in it's just so sweet. And it's such a good time playing in these events.
Yeah, no, it's great. And again, going down with like Dylan, who hadn't been out a long time, but just basically calling him up and say, hey, do you want to come? And yep, I'm down. And then Elliot, like, it was a fun gang. And going down the night before and just not having that, like, blitzing it all in one day.
Ugh.
That was I almost never want to do it the other way again. It was that nice.
That was the tech. That was the technology.
Anyway, super fun. maybe one day in the future we have an event up here and a bunch of the Americans can come up and take all our Monopoly money. But who knows? We'll see. Anyway, is there anything else we wanted to go over with the mocks?
Any notes from last board meeting?
Or last episodes?
There were trial runs for this, the, you know, fantastic one that's absolutely going to get released. Now we should think of a song, but that's for us to think of. And for you to have already heard.
Maybe we should talk about the ahead of time. People just send them to us.
Oh, it has been nice and easy. Like when Jack made this two songs. Mm-hmm. Easy.
Send us your song ideas.
Yeah, send us your songs if you want to be a guest. It's an open an open casting call.
Or just send the song, you know.
It's anonymous Dropbox. Just somebody drops off the worst Matchbox 20 cover you've ever heard. Write that down. Write that down.
Oh, too bad like Fatal Push isn't played a lot anymore.
Ooh. That could be good. Okay. I'm calling it. Let's close it. Let's go to That's Gas. The only gas you could find that's not 250 a liter.
You're really impressed with yourself on that one.
McBain. See, there's a gap, and then nobody laughs, and then it's funnier to me that nobody thought it was funny. McBain. What's up?
What?
Who's gas? You've had a month to think about this. Plenty of time in the tank figuring out who deserves gratitude, who deserves a shout out, what magic related physical product is good enough to shout out on the podcast. Hit me. What do you got?
I'm not going to say what I've written down there. if I'm disappointing you. I was going to shout out several people who I just got to like catch up with and hang out with. Two of them I won't say because for obvious reasons, but catching up with Jordan, Mr. Lee, as he's affectionately known, James Johnson was another great one to catch up with, the Storm Master, who actually top aided the event, but then got paired against Oops All Spells, which is like the worst thing you could imagine on Ant, and died. He probably would have won the event, honestly. It was a bunch of dirtily decks that he was up against.
It's also just like a safe bet to make.
Yeah. So James was great to catch up with. We spent a bunch of time with Greg as well. Greg was absolute gas just to hang out with and then chat with after the event. Adam, you've already mentioned Miles as well. And there were several other people that we ran into. So it was just getting back to that like in-person vibes, hanging out. And yeah, I think we were just all so jacked at the end of that event. We're like, yes, this is the feeling. This is what we're missing. Yeah. So that was absolute gas. Jeff.
Sure. Obviously echoing everything you said, you know, seeing all these people the first time in a couple of years, talking to them, it was such a good time catching up with people and like, you know, hanging out with Greg after and like having dinner and just like, not just magic catching up, but also like more personally catching up about stuff was great. Seeing Jeremy playing Revised 40, although I never had to play myself. Like the Dylan had a fair amount of time given how he did in the tournament. And I think the Revised 40 deck I brought was something that he liked quite a bit. So letting Jeremy play that with, you know, as Canadians, some battle box, all extremely good. But I need to shout out the man. It's been shouted out and mentioned many times in this episode. Jack Vanilla, great. You know, we've been talking about Esper Vitalist for forever and always bouncing ideas off each other on Discord. He's, you know, putting up with my awful suggestions and then following through and putting up results with them when I can't.
definitely results on player skill there. And big thank you to his pet Drake Giuseppe, who is the only gilded Drake that I cast all tournament. And I used it last game of the last match against Greg Mitchell. Last turn, play a Drake, take your inferior dragon. Drake is superior to dragon. Get a nice 7/7 Murktide Regent. And then cap it off with Skyclaving my own Drake. Oh, beautiful thing of beauty. No coming back from that. Giuseppe with a bullet.
Just kind of building on that whole like paper magic and everyone having a great time. I remember like wondering how you were doing in your last match. And I looked over and like, I couldn't tell what was going on because you were both like so happy and excited as you were playing. I was like, I'm pretty sure this is like close to a win and in, or you were like right on the bubble and you probably wouldn't make it. But it was, I just couldn't understand what's going on. And then I like, you're explaining afterwards, you're like, oh, I was Skyclaving my Drake. Like it was the perfect.
I had to keep giving Greg all of my cards so he could read them because this guy plays all these formats and doesn't know what Atris the Oracle does. Unbelievable. and yeah, that was for, I think we were thinking it was a long shot we'd be in contention because the winner would be 4-2. And as you know, McBain, there were a lot of draws this tournament. Maybe some that you contributed to. I finished 4-2 after beating Greg, got 10th place. So it was a clean cut on 13 points. So we were locked out. Quinn, you didn't go to the event, but do you have any guess?
I want to ask, this is the most times we've probably like mentioned one person in the segment. I wanted to ask guest Jeremy because he's always sending us updates on what's going on, in the Pacific Northwest. And then also, for a change up on that, whoever passed me the Oko this morning in pack 3 of my cube draft, thank you. I needed that to complete my deck. I have to be right back, so I'm going to let you guys sign it off.
Holy shit. It's been, how do we do this? It's been so long. Goodbye, everybody. It's literally been
like a month.
Thank you for listening to the Canadian Threshold. You can find us on Twitter at Canadian Thresh.
It's
posted episodes
right in the notes there
on MTG Legacy subreddit, the CanadianThreshold.com, SoundCloud, Spotify. We got it all. Some of us are on Twitter sometimes. One of us is on Twitter all the time. scene. See you in 2 thresholds. Giuseppe.